He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Hello to our listeners for this week's show on Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. We are in the middle of fall, and the colors are brilliant in pockets and waning in others, and the leaves are falling depending on the weather and the wind and all that kind of thing, which all which adds to visual problems, in my opinion, about people who walk on our roadways and or bike on our roadways during this period of time. The bicyclists are out in force on weekends. They're out sometimes during the week, and people are walking on the roads. We have school kids from Hotchkiss walking to Lakeville and back, and we have a winding section of road between the town and the school. And I wanted to say this goes to the heart of an admonition by me to all drivers to pay good attention to the roadways before you're paying attention to anything else inside your vehicle or outside your vehicle that does not have anything to do with paying attention to what is going on the roadways as you're driving from point A to point B. Walking, the school kids seem to walk two or three parallel, which means they can be outside the sort of so-called white walking, designated walking bicycling alley on our roads, which are not very wide because the roads themselves are not wide enough to give you true bicycle lanes or walking lanes. And if they're not wearing bright clothing, they can be all but invisible in the late afternoons as the darkness is falling ever earlier. You come around a corner in one area, and you can see three kids walking either the same direction you're going, which they should not be doing, on the same side of the road, or walking at you as they should be doing, but three abreast, as many as two or three abreast, or sometimes more, talking away. And they are not looking at the cars coming at them. Let me tell you, if you were to distract yourself with looking at their eyes while you're driving towards them or around them, they're looking at phones, they're talking away, looking at each other, and they do not pay much attention to the traffic conditions that are approaching them. So bicyclists are the same way. I had an occasion to come upon some bicyclists that were in a pack, and when they didn't think there were any cars on the road, they were four or five abreast, which had them well out into the travel lane. And some of our side roads, White Hollow Road, any of these town roads that sometimes are not even marked with yellow lines in the center. These bicyclists can come around a corner going 45 in miles an hour, and all of a sudden there's a pack of five bicycles in front of you doing 20. And you do have to be sure you're watching the road as opposed to anything else, such as your screens on your car trying to run it, which Jay will get into in a minute. So focus, drivers, please, focus. Walkers, if you listen to this show and you're going to walk, please wear something that is more colorful and visually apparent to catch your eye than dark clothing like browns, grays, blues, that do not show up very quickly in eyesight, peripherally or otherwise, as we are moving along the roads in vehicles.
Yes, pay attention to the road. And I struggled with that a little bit this week as I was trying to discover the functions of a new vehicle to me. And I gave up on that. I just drove the car. But I want to talk about the cars I had the opportunity to drive this past week. And those were the two new, the new
electrified vehicle.
Electric Porsche Macan. And I actually drove two different ones, and also an older, it's only 2 years old, but ICE-powered Porsche Macan. And so drove all three pretty much on the same route, Lakeville to New York and back. So each trip was a little over 200 miles. And I was familiar with the gas-powered Macan, and I absolutely loved the car. always have, and I agree with the specialized press that seems to place the McCann at the top of their choices when we're talking, you know, higher-end, luxury, mid-size SUVs. So, you know, the Macan compares to a BMW X3, but not an X. I mean, it's smaller than an X5. A Cayenne would compare it to an X5. You know, comparing it, the Macan to an Audi Q5. Trying to think of others off the top of my head, but mid-size luxury SUVs. And the reception of the electric Porsche Macan has been, you know, lukewarm. A lot of the Porsche fans cannot relate to an electric-powered Porsche. And I think that's a big mistake, because having driven both and back-to-back, I can tell you that the electric Macan is at least as enjoyable to drive as the gas-powered one. It feels very similar when you're sitting in the car. It's pretty much the same size, same type of comfort seats, sporty comfort seats. The seating position is very similar. The dash looks pretty much the same. And, Robin, you'll be happy to learn that the Macan, both the gas-powered and the new electric one, have a lot of buttons on the center console. So a lot of the functions are still driven by you know,
and knob.
Actually, little switches on the electric Macan. Very simple, very effective. Love it. Also, on the new Macan electrics, you get in the car, you plug in your phone, CarPlay pops right up, and the first question on your phone will be, do you want to allow wireless connection with the car? You tap yes, and that's it. No connection, no going to Bluetooth, no putting codes. It really has made things very, very simple.
Which means the electronics are getting better selection and design work, right?
Yeah,
versus the original cars that came out with these new fangled ways of connecting.
What was not user friendly was the little buttons on the steering wheel to try to change what you could see on the dash, and I never really got into that. Like I said, again, I was driving, didn't have time. You know, I could have stopped over, pulled over, spent 10-15 minutes figuring out the car. Which, if you buy one of these cars, any new car for that matter, you should learn all the systems in the car, and it takes time. And as cars get more complex, it takes more and more time. But didn't have time to do that, so I drove the cars as they came. There are four different models of the Macan, and I drove the two middle range, if you will. There's a base model, which is a two-wheel drive only, which I don't think makes much sense in the Porsche world, only because they're already very expensive to begin with. So if you're going to spend that kind of money, you might as well splurge for the all-wheel drive. I think that if you're buying an Ioniq 5 Hyundai or a new Tesla Y, going with the two-wheel drive versions, quote-unquote base models, where you can keep the price in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, makes a lot of sense. I think in the case of the Macan, where you're talking about cars that go from $75,000 to over $100,000, you know, if you can spend $75,000 on a car, you can probably spend $90,000. I mean, I know that that doesn't necessarily make sense, but kind of how I feel. So the two four-wheel, all-wheel drive cars I drove are dual motors. The 4 is 400 horsepower. The 4S is 500 horsepower. I drove both of them, like I said, to New York and back. Same driving conditions, same little acceleration runs. I honestly cannot tell the difference between the two. The 4 is faster than 99% of the cars that were on the road 15 years ago. And I really gets 20 miles more range than the 4S. I really don't see the point of the 4S unless it means something to you to have a little S on the back of the car. you're losing a little range and really not gaining anything as far as performance.
Were the battery packs similar in the two 400s?
They're exactly the same, 100 kilowatts.
There wasn't a bigger battery pack with the 4S, which is 40 years?
No, same battery pack. And I believe what they call the turbo, which is the high performance, obviously there's no turbo on an electric car, the turbo, which makes over 600 horsepower, I believe has the same battery as well. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, were they both, was the one a two-wheel drive and the other was four?
No. Both of them were all-wheel drive.
Okay. So you've driven three, one gas, and two electrics, all all-wheel drives.
Correct.
Okay.
The three cars I drove.
But you mentioned that the, one of them comes in a two-wheel drive version.
I did, after driving the electric cars, I did a little research on the car and the specs and pricing and so forth and so on. And there is a two-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive only Macan.
Okay.
But like I said, you're spending $75,000 on the car. You know, I mean, if you're on the budget, I get it. Because the two-wheel drive cars will, like in the Ioniq 5, well, actually, that's not true. I think the Ioniq 5, the all-wheel drive gets better mileage, better range than the two-wheel drive. But there's certainly a cost difference. And performance-wise, most of these two-wheel drivers have very adequate performance. I mean, the push in acceleration in an electric car is so
ludicrous.
Linear
it's
that
linear.
it's not about maximum performance. It's about usability, I was going to say, if that's even a word, but it's how easy it is to get to, you know, any speed you want to reach. You know, you pull from a or you merge on a ramp on a highway, and you get up to speed in no time flat. And they're very comfortable cars. They're very well sprung. They're both comfortable. They're soft enough to be comfortable. But you can feel a certain firmness that makes the car handle very well. I think the cars handle as well as the gas-powered version.
Are there driver select options in the performance features of the Porsches,
so
as opposed to where they are in the Q5 Audis?
I was surprised to find that there was no eco mode. You know, a lot of the cars, whether hybrids or even gas cars or electrics, have an eco mode where you maximize economy to the detriment of performance.
Who would want an eco mode in a Porsche?
There's an off-road mode, there's a normal mode, and then there's a sport mode. And we get to the few things I dislike about the car. In sport mode, you just have this humming noise, like Porsche felt the need to put sound inside the car to make it sound like a sports car. And it's just ridiculous, annoying, and pointless.
Can you turn that off?
And I just drove in normal mode. And honestly,
okay.
I didn't. The normal modes have so much performance that there just is no point in
sport mode.
In sport mode, there's just no point. And if you look at the raw numbers, yes, the 400 horsepower takes a little longer to get to 60 miles an hour and a little longer to get to a quarter mile. But we're still talking quarter miles in the 13 seconds. I mean, that is faster than, like I said, 99% of the cars 15 years ago. That is faster than what we used to call muscle cars in the 60s and 70s. Way faster. So it's just, the performance is there, like with most electric cars. But I have to say the quality of the finish, the ride, is just really, really good. I mean, it goes to the top of my list.
You sold me.
I sold you?
Except for my wallet, I would go right out and buy an electric Porsche. But I'd also buy maybe an electric car in general with that kind of thing. The range upon your returns, presumably you started out with all three vehicles with relatively full fuel tanks or battery charging levels. And at the end, when you came back, did you have range anxiety factor with any of them before you got back to a charging station or not?
Well, all right, let's talk about this. And let's say I was not quite anxious, but So we know the Macan, the gas Macan has a close to 500 mile range, over 450. The car gets really good mileage actually, and has a decent sized tank. So obviously that's a non-issue. 450, 500 miles, with gas stations everywhere. Okay, there's no anxiety. I drove the 4S before I drove the 4, and it was only charged at 80%. So we started out with 257 mile range, and had I read the book before, and had I known that the published EPA range is 288 miles, I would have been a little uncomfortable making the drive. But I thought, oh, okay, you know, this person's done it before. We can do this. Turns out it was a brand new car, and this person had never gone to New York with the car. But anyway, that's a different story. I drove the car. I got back. When I got to New York, I had 160-mile range. So I figured, okay, I started out with close to 260. I had 160 left, so I used up 100 miles worth of range.
Which is the distance, one-way distance, to much of New
York's
area.
So driving the other way, I thought, okay, well, if I drive the same way, I'm going to get back with the same... 60 left. Well, I only had 30 left. And I honestly swear to God, I drove exactly the same way coming back. So
for our listeners, let me interrupt you. It is interesting because I have the same relative differential, not mileage-wise, but performance-wise in miles per gallon, actually.
So it's
hybrid.
Too.
And you're going downhill towards New York City, ever so slightly, from 700 feet, which is what our general average price height or level is above sea level in Sharon and Salisbury and the like, and to New York, which is on basically probably 30 feet above water. So that's being real smart aleck about your comment about the range anxiety, losing 30 miles, but I think that's part of what it is, too.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, and that's what came to my mind. I've noticed that, too. You get less, your gas
mileage coming north than you do going down.
Correct.
Yeah, same driving habits.
But the reality was, okay, 30 miles is a little close for comfort if you have to make a little detour. Yeah. I mean, it was okay.
That 30 miles, Jay, this goes to the same heart of the electric range anxiety situation, not to belabor that, but if you took a side trip, on your way back you had decided to go over to Poughkeepsie before you got back here, you might not have had 30 miles left.
Yeah,
you know?
And I was coming back to a house where you just plug it into your own home.
Right, exactly.
And it's not an issue. But so to your point, I get it, 30 miles is a little short. But again, that car was charged at 80%, not 100%. The second one I took was fully charged and had, when I left, 330-mile range, and it had, I forget, I think it was...
200-plus when you got to New York.
I consumed less electricity with that car. It does consume a little less, the 4 relative to the 4S, and it gets better range. It's the same battery pack, and it gets 20 miles better range, and that's what I saw in real life. So,
good morning.
I had well over 100, I think 130 miles on the range meter when I got back with the car. So plenty left.
Right.
So if, Porsches, Mercedes, usually for some reason the European manufacturers, EPA range tends to be a very conservative figure. And most of them, same case with Mercedes, will do better than their advertised range, which is not the case oftentimes with other electric cars. So you get a Macan, you fully charge it, you're going to New York and back. I don't know that you can go to Boston and back.
I was going to bring up the Boston alternative.
Yeah,
could you have done that in one fell round trip, non-charging in the intermediate stop or not? And you're confirming what I would suspect. It's certainly with the 4S, right?
Yes. But again, I mean, honestly, I think that if you are out to buy a Macan, the 4 is the way to go. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
Okay, good.
And I look forward to seeing the new Cayenne.
Okay. What's next on your front? Any anything going on? Car clubs around our area almost every weekend in the fall. Do you know? Because I noticed that there's been activity in our local racetrack, Lime Rock, on weekends. I haven't noted that there was any major race event going on.
There was a bigger race event this past weekend, which I had no part in. But I think it for major events, and now you'll get car clubs. So you'll see car clubs around. We see nice cars around the countryside here.
Okay. car prices. It's been made known in the news stories that the car prices have now, average car price of cars being sold this year, have approached $50,000. Average of all the car sales is rounded up to around $50,000. One news item said 49, another one said 50, which tells you that prices have only been going up on new vehicles. These are new vehicles, not used. There was some commentary about used vehicle prices also rising from a very interesting standpoint, in that there didn't seem to be that the used price, the used cars are tending upwards in terms of levels of equipment and stuff, maybe because people are buying higher levels of new cars, and the used cars that come on the market, are many of them are off-leased vehicles, and they get into the used car market either through the dealerships that lease them in the first place, or they get there from auctions and they get moved around the country. So even though we've been talking about used cars being a good alternative, and they still are a good alternative if your wallet can't buy you the new car of your choice, everything has been creeping up as we go towards 2026 and forward. There are plenty of used cars around. Jay, you and I travel by a great big General Motors dealership, GM dealership on 22, and those meadows around that dealership are just full of new and used vehicles, many trucks.
I was wrong? I thought that the COVID years with low inventories would redefine the sales and marketing model for automobiles in this country,
and it has not.
We're back to
the usual,
shoving inventory left and right on dealers, and then inventory just sits there for 100 days, and then somebody buys them off the lot. I thought we'd get over that, but nope. We have not.
We had an interesting Bronco breakfast around our area, Northwest Connecticut area, over the past weekend that this show was done. And it was held at one of the Ford dealerships nearby, or the only Ford dealership nearby. And I attended it on the Sunday or Saturday that it was held, and it was a fun event. I'm a very big Bronco fan, not so much of the new ones, but my first two vehicles, and some listeners who have listened to me long enough to hear this story know that they were the first vehicles that I ever had in my life, and that was back in 69 and 73. I had one Bronco in each, and one was a fairly well the higher-end vehicle with a V8 engine and automatic, and the first one was a six-cylinder one with a three on the tree, as they call it, three speed manual.
Which one did you flip?
What?
Which one did you flip?
I rolled the V8. That's not a story for another time. I did roll my Bronco coming home. I was doing 30 miles an hour when I rolled it. I hit these SUVs, the Wranglers, the Broncos, and anything that the Land Cruisers, they all have fairly stiff suspensions. You were talking about how Porsche's suspension is really, it's stiff and compliant at the same time. Compliant is not a good word to use for Wranglers and Broncos so much, although I will say the shock systems in these vehicles are now very high-tech shocks, and they do tend to have adjustability either automatically or manually in them. But the high relative seating and the high ground clearance off the road caused this car, the Bronco that I rolled, to, when it hit one of those asphalt curbings designed to control water flow along the highways, as we see now on our newly paved roads in places, caused the car to bounce because I was turning to avoid running into a vehicle that was in front of me. It had pulled out in front of me in a dark, it was a very dark evening and it was raining, had pulled out ahead of me, but not really, they shouldn't have done so, but I was, even at 35 miles an hour, because I was looking for some place to eat, so I was going slowly, I was not able to avoid crashing into it had I continued straight, even with the brakes on. So I had the brakes on, the wheels turned sharp to the right, they bounced, and I rolled. And I don't know why I got into this part. I think you brought it up, Jay.
I brought it up, but it's
But the Bronco, let's go back to the Bronco breakfast. I saw Raptor Broncos. I saw all sorts of Broncos. Some had Florida plate. One had a Florida plate as a source of having they come up here in the summer. They were so spit and polished to within an inch of diamond-like paint jobs. And all I could think of is none of these vehicles, and there were probably 20 people who brought their vehicles in, mostly four doors, a few two doors, which is my favorite version of the Bronco because I don't need four doors worth of space. None of them go off the road. I asked one Bronco owner, do you ever take these off the road? They had two-door Broncos, a Strop edition. For those who were Bronco lovers, will remember Bill Strop in the last century era designed a color design and a component design version of those early Broncos. And they said, no, they used a Jeep to go off-road. I thought that was very interesting. That was a very amusing comment that I got out of one owner.
I don't know. Were these new Broncos or old?
Yes,
Broncos?
They're all the new Broncos. There was an old. There was a Bronco 2. I do not know who owned that one, but everything was the current generation of Bronco that came in. It was not, and the dealership had brought in a couple of other dealerships' versions of Broncos that were available for purchase because they didn't have a big inventory of their own in the dealership in Millerton. And so it was a nice event. It went from 9 to 12. They offered breakfast and coffee and all that. And there was lots of blathering going on between owners. And I talked to some about my early days in Broncos. And they said, oh, yeah, those were good, too. But they all loved their Broncos. There wasn't one. I guess I wouldn't expect anybody to say they didn't like it. But to see three or four Raptors, and Raptors are like the Ford Raptor trucks. They've got the biggest engine you can stuff into the engine bay. They've got huge tires on them. They are outfitted with all the options you can get, and they probably run around $100,000 new out of the, by the time they get the stickers all up with all the locking differentials and the like. But it was a fun event, and I don't know that the public really knew much about it because the advertising that I saw, it was plastered on a van that was parked in the Ford dealership, saying it advertised this Bronco breakfast. And I actually thought the dealership was putting it on for them to try to sell Broncos. I couldn't have been further from the truth. It was put on by another outfit that that brought in the breakfast and the food, and they had the parking lot all done. So if there's anybody who's listening to this Bronco blather, and you were there, you probably enjoyed it as much as I did. Otherwise, you didn't even know what was going on.
So I'm actually a big fan. I've driven a new Ford Bronco, and I think it's I'm a fan and not a fan. I mean, I've driven it with the four-cylinder turbo, which I think the Ford engine. I think it's a great engine, and it works well in the Bronco. The only
it
problem
does. I agree with you totally, and that's my choice. If I were to buy one, I would do that. And I have a relative who owns it and has a six-speed. It's a seven-speed manual. It's got a granny gear in the first speed, but it's a manual transmission, and I really enjoyed both that engine and the transmission combination. I don't think there was a manual transmission Bronco. I looked at pretty much inside of many of the vehicles that were there, and they were all automatics. And most of them had the V6 as the base engine. I don't know that anybody had the four-cylinder turbo, but I agree with you. That's the engine I would buy were I to want to buy a Bronco.
And having said all of this, gentlemen, we have reached the end of the show, so it's time to
Exit mode. Oh, my God, when you're having fun, time flies.
Too much fun.
So the listeners who have had a good time listening to the Bronco stuff and the Porsche stuff this week, we are finishing the show, and until next time, we are Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.